You know, it's just the way it goes. Okay, so let's talk about the background of Exodus, the book of Exodus here for a minute. The first few chapters, chapters 1 through 3, are all about Moses. It's his birth. It's his rescue by Pharaoh's daughter, and then him growing up. Chapters 3 and 4 deal with the mission. It's the burning bush. Moses meets God in a very spectacular way. Chapters 5 through 11 is all about Moses and Aaron dealing with Pharaoh. Now, if you've noticed, Pharaoh's kind of a stubborn guy, and it takes a lot for him to finally break. Now, there's 10 or so of the miracles that Moses performed during these encounters, these battles with Pharaoh and his sorcerers. The sorcerers were only able to do the first four events. So, like, they'd throw down the staff. Moses put down the staff. It would turn into a snake. The sorcerers were able to do the same thing. They put down their staffs. They turned into snakes. The funny thing was is that the staff that became the snake for Moses, that snake ate everybody else's snakes. Yeah. You know, it's kind of the weird animal stories. You know, we've talked about the talking donkey. I'm sure that's going to be sticking around with us for a while. But it's these different things that they're very real examples of how God uses the ordinary to perform extraordinary activities and events and leave good memories. Now, you go to the Passover. The Passover's really the big pinnacle of the whole Exodus story in the first 15 chapters. Because Passover is, now we're going to put blood of the Lamb, above the doors of each of the houses where the Israelites lived. And that way, when the spirit of death comes, it only goes after the Egyptians. It goes after their firstborn children, but also goes after the firstborn of animals. Okay, so then during the night, there's this huge outcry from the Egyptians because now firstborns are gone. Doesn't matter if it's a boy or a girl, the husband or the wife, they're gone. They are now dead because they are the firstborn. It is at that point, because Pharaoh loses his son also as a firstborn, it is at that point that finally Pharaoh says, I've had enough. You can leave. Now, this is where it gets interesting that Israel at that point plunders Egypt, plunders them. It isn't that just 600,000, because they're talking 600,000 men, women, not including the count of the children, 600,000 men and women take everything that Israel's got for silver and gold and other precious metals. They plunder the country and they take it with them to go. Now, do you think it's not by accident that God let them do that, because they needed that for when it came time for the tabernacle, not for the temple. That's during David's time, but for the tabernacle. So we have all these people leave. Now, I don't know about you, but what I saw in the verses, God did some pretty spectacular things. They had the 10 plagues. They had the Passover. They all get to leave. They are booted out. They're not just helped out the door. They are booted out of Egypt because Egypt's had enough of them. So that's a miracle in itself. So now 430 years of what turned into slavery is now over. As they are leaving at night, now it said in the verses, at night it was lightning. Other translations will say a tower of flame is what led them at night. But during the day, it was a cloud. Well, that's pretty interesting. Don't you think that here's something very natural, you know, like we watch clouds going by or we watch the lightning or the rain and that sort of thing. But here's something that's very deliberate. And the folks here, 600,000. Are following a cloud, or they're following the lightning, or a column of flame, depending again on your translation. Don't you think that starts setting up some memories within those people? But as they are headed to the Reed Sea, or the more translation is the Red Sea, as they're headed to the Red Sea, they know that the Egyptian army and the Pharaoh, they're now very upset, and they are hot on their tracks. They are coming to kill all of them before they get across the sea. Moses stands. He says, how am I going to split the Red Sea? He puts his staff out, and it splits. And if you really want to see how it's done, just watch the Ten Commandments with Charlton Heston. You know, he's spectacular in that movie. Now, what you don't want to watch is Mel Brooks' version of the Ten Commandments. Okay, that's not what you want to watch. But, as funny as it is, but the Red Sea splits, the ground is dry, and the people cross it. Now, I'm pretty sure that in Pharaoh's mind, he sees the Red Sea is open, and he is charging as fast as he can with all his chariots. And away they go. They drop into the trough that is dry between all the water. And I can be sure that the last Israelite, the last is fast getting out of there because they know the water is going to come down. And God waits until Pharaoh and this entire army is down there on the dry ground, and he allows it all to crash. The Israelites go, where's all the Egyptian army? They start seeing all the bodies washing up on the shoreline. And you've got chariots. And you've got the horses. I mean, it's complete death. So that's, to me, that sets up one of those victories. That sets up one of those memories of, here's God working on your behalf. So go to chapter 15 of Exodus in the Bible that you have in front of you. Excuse me. And as we used to do in the Army teaching classes, when you find the spot in the book where you're supposed to be, raise your hand so that I know everybody is there. But I'm not going to do that to you. But thank you, Janelle, for putting your hand up because I know you're already there. Okay, so it's Exodus 15. So we're not going to read this whole chapter. What it is a song that has actually been turned, this whole chapter, much of it, has been turned into a Christian song. I don't know how many of you know that one. It's called The Horse and the Rider is the name of the song. But it says, we will sing to the Lord. This is on verse 1. We will sing to the Lord, for he is highly exalted. The horse and the rider he has hurled into the sea. What a miracle this is. This is just out of the blue. The whole nation is singing this. Now, sometimes I have a hard time understanding that when in the Bible it says, the whole nation sang it. Well, how did the whole nation know this song? Unless they are inspired by the Holy Spirit to sing it. So here is this wonderful testimony of what has just happened in front of them. Have you ever had an event happen in your life where you're just standing there in awe going, wow, that was a God moment? They had a whole bunch of God moments happen within just a couple of days as far as leaving Egypt. But let's go to, okay, now remember, here's a big God moment. We have the cloud. We have lightning or a flame. We've got the Egyptian army is wiped out. Their bodies are washing up on the shores. And let's go to verse 22. Now, in verse 20, it says, Miriam the prophetess, Aaron's sister, took the timbrel in her hand, and the women went out with her with timbrels and with dancing, and they sang part of the song. Sing to the Lord, for he's highly exalted, the horse and the rider he has hurled into the sea. Now, we fast forward, verse 22. Then Moses led Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur, and they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. Now, they've just had this wonderful experience with God, watching God work. Verse 23, when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore, it was named Marah. Verse 24, I love this. So the people grumbled at Moses, saying, what shall we drink? Then he cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree, and he threw it into the waters, and the waters became sweet. And then they were able to drink of the water. So here they've had this wonderful experience with God for the last few days. And 3 days into the wilderness, they think they're starving. They think they're going to die of thirst. And God goes, no, that's not what's going to happen. And he tells Moses what to do. Now they have water. Let's go to chapter 16. Go to chapter 16. Let's look at verse 3. We're starting with verse 2. Let's start there. The whole congregation of the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. The sons of Israel said to them, would we that had died by the Lord's hand in the land of Egypt when we sat by the pots of meat, when we ate bread to the full. In other words, they're referring back to Egypt saying, we had good times there. We had it made. We were in good shape. We ate, we drank water, you know, all that sort of thing. But you have brought us out in this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. So now God introduces, they're going to have meat. They're going to have the beginning of manna, you know, bread from heaven, bread that the angels eat. But here's what I want you to see is that when things got tough for them, they started grumbling. They weren't showing gratitude. They weren't remembering the memories that they have just had with God. So what's the root of some of the grumbling? It comes up to being fearful. In your journey, in my journey, I've had some tremendous times of fear. And I forget some of my memories of God. So this is what I challenge you with this morning is don't grumble. Don't grumble. I know it's easier said than done, but think about this for a minute. The nation of Israel, when was it birthed? When was the nation of Israel birthed? It was a concept with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. When did the nation really come together? It's when they came out of 430 years of captivity in the world of Egypt. When they came out of that, they were a ragtag group of people. Let's face it for what they were. They'd been slaves for 430 years. Each generation, as they moved down the calendar, forgot about what the other generations had done. The Egyptians forgot about what they had done for the Israelites and what the Israelites had done for them, namely in the form of Joseph. They had forgotten. You got a whole new sheriff in town, so to speak. And so nobody knows the past history, so they don't remember any of the good things. So now they're coming out of this world that they think is perfection for them. That's their form of heaven. They get out in the wilderness, boys and girls, they're out in the wilderness for the next 40 years. That's a long time to get some things worked out. And they grumbled on and on and on for that 40 years. And it reached a point of grumbling that God was, I don't want to say he was angry, but he was mighty cranky. Let's just face it. And he reached a point in Exodus where he says, I have had enough. I will not let this generation see the promised land. So that current generation that was there, when the last person died, that's when they were ready to go into the promised land. Because they grumbled so much and they railed against Aaron and Moses all the time. They were unhappy people. They didn't like it out there. Now I would imagine that Sinai is probably a little hot. But that's what they grew up in. That kind of country. So, they're ragtag. They don't know God. But God is going to spend the next 40 years training them. Does that sound familiar in your life? Do you ever feel, I'm sorry if I go back to my military background. Do you ever feel like you're just in the perpetual boot camp? And you're getting up every morning and you're starting over again. Today I'm going to do better. You go to sleep. The next day rolls around. Today, I'm going to do better. You're not by yourself. I'm in the same boat. We are all in this together, believe it or not. Now, when we prayed together, when I had everybody pray together, we started with Janelle, and then I went into the general prayers. How did that feel? Instead of being in the pews where you're at right now, how did that feel to have everybody together? You had that sense of community. there was that power of love. There was the power of the Spirit right there. It was a good thing. So what's really going on with this whole story? I'd already covered it. One was the grumbling. They're constantly grumbling. But why are they grumbling? It's because they're afraid. They're afraid of the change. They're afraid of the challenge. They're afraid of the obstacles that are coming their way. Yahweh, the Lord, the translation is the Lord, Yahweh was working with them to say, you don't have to be afraid. I'm here. I'm God. I'm going to protect you. You're going to be fed, clothed. You're going to have water. You're going to see the promised land. But they couldn't grab a hold of that part. Every time you turn around, it's like every few days, and the nation grumbled. It seems clear that every time there's a new challenge or an obstacle presented to them, how many times have we all heard this from other people? They complain, it's too hard. Said that to yourself? If you looked in your mirror lately and go, it's too hard. It's too hard. But it's not too hard because we have the victory. So what you have to answer back is when somebody says, well, it's too hard. You look at them and go, really? It's not. It's mindset. It's a mindset of the Spirit. Where is the memories of their victory? That's where we keep coming back to with the Israelites. That all these victories, one after another, God constantly showing himself, and yet they would forget. And they would be fearful. They'd be grumbling. They'd be unhappy. And they're looking at Aaron and Moses to be scapegoats. Does that sound familiar to you? Do you do the same thing? I do the same thing. That's part of the human condition. Okay, so does any of this apply to you? Here's some thoughts for you. When you look at yourself in the morning, now work with me here. Some of us may not remember. In happy days, you had the fawns. And what did the fawns do? The fawns would be in the mirror and he's doing his whole thing. He'd go, hey, he's good. He's set to go. That's a guy who's got a massive positive ego about himself. Now, when you look in the mirror, are you the fawns? Or are you looking at yourself going, oh my God, my bed hair is horrible. You're looking at your self-image and you're going, oh, this is not going to work out today. Today's not going to be a good day. When in fact, you can actually say, today is going to be a good day. It's a day of victory. Once again, I have the victory. Be honest with yourself. If you're unhappy with yourself, do you beat yourself up? Do you beat yourself up? I'm too ugly. I'm too fat. I'm too old. I'm balding. My hair is turning gray. I'm at loose ends. I'm not picking on anybody that's in here that's bald. It's okay, Larry. Oh, now you've just been recorded on the system. Be honest with yourself. When you look in the mirror, say, it's going to be a day of victory. And then you say, the Lord's with me. The Lord's with me. It's an easy thing to do. Look in the mirror and just go, the Lord's with me. You already have the world against you because you're a Christian. Well, let's have fun with that. The Lord's with me. How can I mess with the world and put a smile on their face and they don't know it? When you look in the mirror at yourself, you are created in his image. It says so in Genesis. Adam was created in his image. We, as men and women, are created in God's image. Remember that. That's a victory for you. We are created in God's image. Remember the victories. Be honest now. How many of you have a hard time remembering the victories you've had in God in a moment of struggle? Yep. Put all your hands up. Okay? It happens to all of us. Again, part of the human condition because we forget. We get wrapped up in ourselves. We get wrapped up by the world when, in fact, God's already got it figured out. We just have to be willing participants in his plan for us. In Exodus, the nation had to overcome the way of the Egyptian lifestyle because that's all they knew. Yeah, they knew, okay, we're Jews or we're Hebrews or we're the promised nation of God. But what they really knew was the lifestyle of Egypt. They'd been there for 430 years. They knew their religion. They knew their lifestyle, the culture. Probably they knew the language very, very well. So when God took them out, they had to start over. That generation did not know Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You know, their descendants. They didn't, or their folks that were there ahead of them. They did not remember them. So they had to learn God's way. So if you look at Exodus, throughout Exodus, it's, where's the Ten Commandments come from? Exodus. Where's some of the first religious laws come from? Exodus. Where's the tabernacle start? Exodus. There's all this religious rites starts in Exodus. Exodus is a very important book for the birth of the nation of Israel. They started learning to rid themselves of fear, lack of gratitude, and build memories of their victorious life that they had in, I started saying Jesus, but at that time, in God, in Yahweh. Sometimes I think we need to take, instead of saying the nation of Israel in here, in the book of Exodus, put in Christian church. The Christian church. Christian church needs to be led out of some of its own darkness that it's had over the centuries. And then when you reach that point, put your name in there. Put your own name in there. Say, Keith was let out. Larry was let out. Dave was let out. Dave was let out a lot of times. No, put your name in there. You were led out of the captivity. Right? A couple other things. When you're fearful, because really my focus for this sermon was to be fear. Why are we fearful? But then as I started going through the first 15, 16 chapters, I realized that really what we were dealing with was a case of ingratitude, the grumbling. Now, fear is underneath it, but it's more important to remember what God has done for you, what God has done for us. Think of yourselves as Aldergate United Methodist Church. What has God done for you as a church? I mean, wow, there's some amazing things that are happening, that have happened and are happening in this church right now. Amazing things. God's with you. God's with me. God's with each one of us. He is with this congregation. Final thought. We are set aside for God's purposes. Everybody say that with me. We are set aside for God's purposes. Why don't you believe that? Why don't you believe that? Because you are. You're created in His image, and we are set aside for His purposes. We're set aside to do the works that He has planned for us. I mean, look at me. I'm a second career person. I expected to be in the military all my life, and I was. And I came out, okay, I'm going to be retired. No, 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 no. That's not the way it worked. What did I end up doing? Going to seminary. Going to Iliff School of Theology there at University of Denver. So God says, yeah, you had your plans, but those plans formed you, changed you, grew you up. I was pretty immature when I was 18, 19, 20. Imagine that. But I was pretty immature, and I went through. Funny how the military can shape you, change you, and make you a whole lot wiser about life. Well, I'm able to take that same thing as a junior pastor. I look at myself as apprentice third class. You know, in the world of being a pastor. You know, someday I might have my union local card that says, you know. But, you know, we'll go with that. But the last thing is, what's more important than anything, is, and if you know this, say it with me. Perfect love casts out all fear. So next time you look in the mirror, love yourself. Give yourself a hug. Give yourself a pat on the back. Do what's right for you. No, do not go out and drive 90 miles an hour on 15. Don't do that. But instead, love yourself. Claim victories that you have. Remember the memories. Remember the memories that God has done for you. Can we all say amen?
Amen.
Amen. And you go, Dave's done.